Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, zebras are back at Blank Park Zoo. We'll find out about a pair of Hartman's Mountain zebras named Duke and Duchess. But first, type 2 diabetes is a dangerous and common disease. According to the CDC, 9.4% of the U.S. population had type 2 diabetes in 2015. Native people and Black Americans are particularly at risk. Genetics play a role, but diet and exercise are vital factors as to whether or not someone will develop the disease. Tara Jordan is an associate professor of food science and human nutrition at Iowa State University. She set out to study the role that family culture and dynamics play in the development and management of type 2 diabetes. A little while later, I'll talk with one of the participants in this study, and Tara Jordan is with me now. Hello, Tara.
Hello, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And your research, this study focused on African-American families. What were you seeing that made you think that that really needed to be the focus of your research?
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here today. First, I want to correct my department affiliation. Oh. My colleagues that I work with the paper on are in food science and human nutrition. I am pleased and privileged to be a member of the faculty in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies. What brought me to the study of type 2 diabetes prevention and management was I joined the faculty at Iowa State University in 2012. And I had the privilege of connecting with our colleagues across the university that had leadership with the Family and Community Health Study, a study that's been going on since the late 90s, both in Georgia and Iowa. And these adults are now middle age to entering older adulthood. And they were noticing elevated rates of A1C, the main indicator for type 2 diabetes. And so I brought to the team expertise in community-based research, and African-American families. And so it's not that my training is in type 2 diabetes research per se, but I bring a relationship focus as a relationship scholar to the study of this chronic disease. And indeed, a lot of what we see in terms of what's going well or what is not going well in the prevention and management of type 2 diabetes is very much relational. Do you have a high-quality relationship with a healthcare provider? What is the social support like with your family and friends? Do you have agency? And so a lot of things that we study in the marriage and intimate relationship arena very easily translate to the study of type 2 diabetes. So that's how I got involved in this area of research back in 2012, and I've been pretty focused on it since I joined the faculty in 2012, so for the past 7 years.
And you mentioned, I mean, this study has been going on for significantly longer than that. Were you able to draw on some of that older information as well to inform your understanding over the last 7 years?
Right. So the colleagues that I work with are the original investigators of that study. And so what they were bringing to the table is, here's what we know so far for the past 15, 20 years about these families. And then we brought those insights into focus groups and other types of small projects that we engaged in. They're also now looking at more biological markers. A different team is looking at genetic markers. And so they are marshaling all of that information and longitudinal data in order to help be more precise in our understandings about the complexities that these families face.
I think most people know that type 2 diabetes, the rates of type 2 diabetes have increased dramatically since the early 90s. They've been going down just a little bit in the last 3 years or so. But Black Americans are at significantly higher risk, more than twice as likely to develop type 2 diabetes than white Americans. And there are so many different factors at play. In your research, how do you try to break things down to isolate the different factors?
Sure. So thank you for sharing those national statistics. Indeed, 8 in 100 Iowa adults have been diagnosed with diabetes. Also at the state level, 42% of adults in Iowa have been diagnosed with diabetes, or what we call pre-diabetes. How I kind of go about the study of it is I'm trained as a qualitative researcher, which means I enjoy learning about the attitudes and the meanings and the nuances that people have about their experiences. And so it's very interesting to have an opportunity to talk with participants. Surveys are important, but I like to delve into the details. And so that is what we did in this particular study. That was the focus of the news release. And so when you talk with families and they talk about the meanings of having certain foods at family celebrations, or actually what the meaning of that diagnosis was, you begin to understand a little bit more about why people are unable to make changes, or just kind of not motivated or empowered to make changes, or how they're really crippled by not feeling like they can ask tough questions of their doctor. And a good example of this is the moment of diagnosis. And what we really found is that a lot of the participants that we interviewed did not understand the diagnosis. And so it wasn't until there was actually maybe a really critical event that really forced them to acknowledge, accept, and ask some tough questions of healthcare providers about how did I get here? How did you arrive at this diagnosis? And so the meanings that people have about their own health and the agency of health are a lot of what we were able to tap into in the interviews.
You bring parents in with their adult children, right?
Right. So that was a hallmark of the Family and Community Health Study. They recruited parents or caregivers and their then adolescent children back in the late 90s, almost pre-adolescent children. And so now these children are they were in their mid-20s when we interviewed them, so they're entering their late 20s to early 30s now. And so we utilize a feature of this particular data set in order to really make a contribution to the literature. I've not seen anywhere where a parent has been interviewed with an adult child. We may see family or support person, but this is a really kind of unique dynamic of this particular data set.
So when you bring in parents and their adult children, how do you explore the dynamics and the knowledge about this disease?
Right. So we start with a question about meaning and ask them, tell me when you were diagnosed and what was that moment like? Some of the folks were diagnosed in a primary care physician's office. Some, as I mentioned before, had a critical health incident, and so maybe they were driven to an urgent care facility, or in some of them, unfortunately, such a critical health incident, they ended up in the ER, and that is where they were diagnosed. And so when you begin to ask people just to kind of recount what that time was like, some of the adult children remembered that time, and some of them did not. It really kind of factored into what the nature of the communication was between the parent and the child about that moment. So it was really quite illuminating, one, to get them to go back down memory lane, but also to see the ways in which, information being shared was either new or, I'm kind of aware of how this happened. And then to dig a little bit deeper into the meanings associated with that. And so, very commonly, it was, yeah, I heard the diagnosis, but I didn't really take it seriously, or I didn't really understand it. Therefore, I really wasn't empowered to get started on a medicine regimen, to modify my diet, to start exercising more, to have a conversation with a diabetes health educator. And so all of those things come out really in the first 10 minutes of the interview.
As we've talked about already, type 2 diabetes tends to run in families. So a lot of these people who are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes probably are related to someone who has the disease or had the disease already. Did you talk to the study participants about how they talked about that within their family unit, like when they were growing up?
Right. So that was another hallmark of this particular small study, was that we wanted to recruit families that had a strong family history of type 2 diabetes. So in order to be eligible for participation, they had to be diagnosed, and they also had to have a biological relative, now living or deceased, who also had been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. So we're talking about, from a medical perspective, families that have a strong family history of this chronic disease. And what we saw was a real range in communication from some parents and adult children, you know, yes, I'm aware of that. I'm aware that, you know, he or she, my parent needs to, or caregiver needs to be on this type of medicine. They need to exercise more, their diet, they're really vigilant. And so for those adult children, they actually see their parent or their caregiver managing things well. They see them checking their blood sugar. They see changes in their diet. They know that they're going to get their regular exercise every day. All of this is about healthy living. For other families, a lot of this information was new. And in particular, I actually had to go back to the Institutional Review Board to request approval to send each and every family away with a packet of information, because very early on in the process, we saw how much the adult children maybe didn't know about type 2 diabetes and the etiology of the disease. And so just from a moral and an ethical perspective, we need to be sure that we are equipping these families that are definitely at high risk with strong family history with at least providing them accurate information about the disease, one, to help support their parent or caregiver, but also to try and help prevent it in the next generation. And so there really was a range of patterns in health communication. It could just be, you know, we're the Jones family, we don't talk about these things. Okay, well, let's deconstruct that a little bit. What does that mean? Are you talking about you're protecting, you know, family members from knowing personal information about you, or you don't want them to be concerned, or, you know, what is the barrier for not sharing and really equipping not only yourself and the next generation for living a fuller life? And so all of those things kind of came to pass and really are represented in the data set.
We're talking about a research study that focuses on type 2 diabetes and family dynamics in African-American families. Tara Jordan is with me now. She is an associate professor in human development and family studies at Iowa State University. We're going to continue our conversation in a moment and bring one of the participants in the study into the conversation as well. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll talk about the new zebras at Blank Park Zoo. Right now, we're talking about a study about type 2 diabetes in African-American families. Black Americans are at much higher risk for developing type 2 diabetes than white Americans. And of course, this is a very common and very dangerous disease in the United States. We're talking about family dynamics and family culture. Researcher Tara Jordan dug into how family culture and family dynamics might affect how someone treats this disease, how someone can or cannot prevent this disease and manage this disease within their family. Tara Jordan is an associate professor of human development and family studies at Iowa State University. And I want to bring Marcus Butts into the conversation now. Marcus Butts lives in Des Moines. He lives with type 2 diabetes, and he's been sharing his experiences with researchers. Hello, Marcus.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Well, and Marcus, I know that you've explained all of this to researchers, but Tara was just saying that this is where it begins. So I'll start in the same place. Can you tell me about when you were diagnosed with type 2 diabetes?
I was diagnosed when I was probably about 31, 32. I was really thirsty, and then I had to urinate a lot, and I just couldn't figure out why, and then I didn't really know what an A1C was, And then when I went to the doctor back then, he diagnosed it to me and started me on metformin. I didn't think it was that big of a deal, you know. I knew I had some family members that had diabetes, and back then they used to call it, I got my sugar, you know. That's what they would say. My grandmother or grandfather would say that, and I didn't really think that much about it. And then later in life, as I got my A1C down and started working on it, and now I got it down to 6.8, and been working with it and watching our foods and watching what we're eating. But when I first started, no, I didn't. I really didn't have a clue.
Well, and you talked about the language that so many people use to talk about type 2 diabetes. I got my sugar. That sounds a lot less frightening than type 2 diabetes. But was there also sort of a sense of inevitability in your family, Marcus, that was just something that was going to happen?
Yes. Yeah, because I had cousins that had it, and I had one cousin that went blind, another one that lost his leg, but it was my cousins. It wasn't nobody in my immediate family. And then we have family members that died of it, so we knew that we had diabetes in the family. But you know, when we cook, or when my family and my wife and anybody that we cook, we like our food to be seasoned, spicy, and got a little good taste to it. And really, kind of, I myself prefer it. I like sweets, so I used to eat a lot of sweets. And I'm a bigger person anyway. You know, I always have been big my whole life. So my mom told me way back when I was a kid that I was going to get diabetes. I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but when you start seeing people die of it and your family members dying, then you think to yourself, wow, wait a minute, this is kind of serious.
Yeah. When you were diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, as you said, it took a while for you to understand the seriousness of what the doctor was talking about. How did you learn about type 2 diabetes? Where did you get your education about it?
Well, I went to... Once I got diagnosed, and my doctor sent me to a diabetic class, you know, where you learn how to watch your portions, watch your carbs, and then I was always exercising and lifting weights and whatnot and trying to walk and trying to stay active. But, you know, I also drank, too. You know, I had me a beer or two, and I come to find out that alcohol wasn't really something that you should have, that you should be doing. With diabetes, you know, with your medications and whatnot. And it took me years to realize that could cause a problem too, besides how you eat, when you eat, and all of that. So, you know, later on in life, now I'm in my mid-50s, well, I'm in my late 50s, and I had a macular, diabetic retinopathy in my left eye, where I had a hole in my retina due to diabetes. And that scared my whole family, my kids, my wife, everybody. And I had to get a surgery in my eye, three surgeries actually.
Wow.
And once I got that, and I said, "Whoa, wait a minute, this is getting a little bit more scarier than I thought it could be, you know, because now it's affecting me and my livelihood and my family." And then before that, I had a wound in my leg that wouldn't heal, and that's when I really started watching it. The first, that was a year ago, and it took 6 months for that wound to heal up. And then when I got the hole in my left eye a little bit after that, and I was really, really thinking I'm doing everything that you can possibly do. I was trying to lose weight. I'm still doing it. I mean, it's a process. It's
yeah.
Nothing that you stop doing, you know. And I started trying to watch what I eat and cutting back on things I used to like. You know, now I don't drink any beer at all anymore. I quit that completely. A lot of some of the donuts and sweet potatoes and stuff that we used to cook with. My wife would cook with greens. When she cooked her greens, you know, I always liked the ham and pork in my greens. And I still do, but I just don't eat I just won't eat that. I like the seasoning. You know,
yeah.
When she cooks fried chicken now, She doesn't use as many seasoning. Sometimes I eat the skin. I love the skin, or I did, or now I might pull the skin off instead of eating it. The doctor always said you're supposed to do that, and I would laugh at him. I would say, yeah, sure, I'm doing this. But and really, when you think about it now, I was actually cheating myself. You know, when I would continue to keep eating things I wasn't supposed to eat, now that it's affecting me and my family, and getting the diabetes where you get a hole in your eye, and you can see, actually see it, because now it's not hearsay, it's actually happening to you.
Right.
And you're like, whoa, wait a minute, this is some serious business.
Right. The danger becomes very, very real. And Marcus, I'm sure so many people who've had to change their lifestyles because of health problems are relating to everything you say. Changing your lifestyle is so incredibly difficult. You mentioned your kids. How many kids do you have?
I have two.
And when you were diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, did you start thinking about their risk for this disease?
Yes, my oldest boy, he's at the time, now that he's my oldest boy, he's 6'6", and he went ahead and got the bypass, because when he seen the stuff happening to me, he said, man, I don't want that happen to me, Dad. So he said, I'm gonna try to stab it off now.
And so he got a gastric bypass to lose weight?
Yes, he did. And so far he lost 140 pounds in the last 6 months. And his diabetes, his A1C down below, it's like 5. And, you know, he was pre-diabetic, but now he's not. He don't have any diabetes. They took him off all of his medication, and he lost all the weight, and he's been exercising. He always exercised. He's always a big, big athletic kid, and big athletic man. And now he's down almost below 300 pounds now, finally.
Wow.
You know, so... And then my youngest boy, he's always been athletic, exercise, weightlifter, and he keeps the weight off him real good. You know, he's down below, well, we're big people, so when I say down below 260, I'm talking like he's 6'4", and he's playing, you know, he's athletic,
yeah.
So.
He's a big guy.
You know, yeah, he's a big guy, you know. And like I said, I'm a big guy my own self. I mean, you know, I'm 6'3". Right now, I probably weigh about 330. You know, and I'm down from 380. So
wow.
I mean,
that's so pretty impressive. So
we're not fatties, or we're just big muscular people.
Right.
You know.
So Marcus, how did you get involved in this research study?
Well, they sent us a letter back in '98 or '99, and we looked at it, and I thought about it, and I thought, well, you know, if it's going to help the black community get more awareness of this disease, then I was all for it. And then me and my son, we was involved, and my wife got involved. And so our whole family been with this Iowa State thing for, I think since its inception.
Yeah, so 20 years.
We've been doing it for a long time. You know, they'll call. Now Tara calls, and they'll call and ask us, do we still want to continue, or ask, we're going to do this, or we're going to have a group meeting, and if we can, we will. You know, and my son and I was in some group meetings, went to the John R. Grubb, I can't remember what year now, it's been several years ago, but there was other men like myself, you know, black men or minorities, and we got around the table and got to talking, and now you're thinking, wow, this is kind of neat, because you're not by yourself. You know,
yeah.
The other people going through the same thing we're going through, same thing you're trying to fight.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you talk about not being by yourself. There are so many black Americans who are dealing with this problem. Do you think that there's been a kind of sense of shame in talking about it?
No, I don't think it's a shame. I think it's, for a black man, he's kind of a macho man. And a lot of us are being denial, especially when it comes to type 2 diabetes. You know, I think myself, I'm more of like a macho man. I didn't want to believe it.
Yeah.
You know, because I've always been big and strong my whole life, been athletic. played football, basketball, any kind of sport you can think of, and I always ran and stayed in shape. And then you're going to tell me that I got something that can possibly kill me? I'm like, you're crazy, you know. And that's how I felt about it. But then once I get older and I'm almost 60 years old and I can barely see out of my left eye, that makes it real.
Right.
And then it's like, well, you know, I wish now that I listened when I had a chance. So any young man or any young Black American man or any African man or any minority or any man per se, don't matter what color they are, I'll let them know. You know,
yeah.
Hey, you know, this is real.
Well, and Marcus, by participating in the study, you are definitely helping others. So thank you so much for your generosity. And before we run out of time, I want to bring Tara back into the conversation. Tara, so many of the things that you have talked about in publishing your research are the same themes that Marcus has been bringing up with, you know, people not talking about diabetes in their family, even though it's something that's going on in the family, the difference in language that people might use in talking about diabetes as opposed to the medical terminology that they're suddenly introduced to. And it sounds like Marcus's family has done so much in working at prevention. I'm curious about how you think this information can best be used to help people prevent diabetes?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is an acknowledgement that diabetes is not a cure. And I came across that quote as a researcher, and I think it's so true. The more you're in denial about a diagnosis, the more you set yourself up for, as Marcus said, you really are hurting yourself. Yet, what we found is the moment of diagnosis is such a critical and pivotal time. So I would encourage people who are listening to be vigilant about their health care, be agents. If you don't understand what your doctors or your health care providers are saying, please be forthright about that. Do not leave that office. Do not just stop taking medicine. Do not just stop checking blood sugars, because those things and those behaviors really do add up in the end. I really think the model for treatment of adult diabetes perhaps needs to change. In the case of pediatric diabetes, it would never be that you bring a child in and you diagnose them with type 2 diabetes and you say, here's the diagnosis, here's your medicine, go to diabetes education classes, and do you have any questions? They would bring people in, the parent, caregiver, doctor, nurse, diabetes educator, have everybody to sit at the table with the patient. And I think that wraparound communication is something that adults really could benefit from. Certainly adults like we were studying that have a strong family history, for which families like the Butts family and other families, it almost as if you're paralyzed in that moment, because you think about other family members who unfortunately may have lost their lives or are coping with very serious complications of type 2 diabetes. And that is not the way it has to be. But it has to be a moment of empowerment. And that begins with the patient first understanding, how did I get here? And then what is then the turning point to be sure that I can move things in a different direction? And so oftentimes, unfortunately, we see that turning point being another critical event, health crisis, that then reels them back in, as Mr. Butt said, you know, this thing is real and it has real consequences if you don't take it seriously.
One thing we have not talked about is distrust of the medical system among Black Americans, which is a very real problem based on real problems in the past and in the present. And that can create a lot of barriers to communication. How have you approached that in your research, and how can the medical profession learn from what you've learned?
No question. It is definitely a part of, it's in the mix, as we call it, as qualitative researchers. It's in the data set. Some families talked about it explicitly. Other families kind of alluded to it. What I would say to healthcare providers is just to acknowledge that it's in the room, whether it's something that you've done personally or not, understand that for most adults from underrepresented groups, it's on their mind. Can I trust this diagnosis? Can I trust you? And so I would just say, be transparent about it. Acknowledge that it's a part of, unfortunately, some of the inequality that we continue to see in our nation. And just be patient with individuals as they work to get to know you, as they work to build trust. And understand that you may have to work a little bit over time to acknowledge that I may not have answered all your questions today. Here's how you can get in touch with me. I'm on your team. I want to be sure that everything goes according to plan, that you're living a lot healthier, that we really get this under control. All the things that you can do to kind of reassure people that I want to do my part to not be a part of the problem, but to be a part of the solution, to be a real champion for you and your health.
Tara Jordan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Marcus Butts, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
I hope you continue to do well. I was talking with Marcus Butts, who was a participant in this study about type 2 diabetes and family culture, and Tara Jordan, Associate Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa.